It's good to be here, and it's good to see all of you. And you're part of a wonderful Sangha. And those of you who are relatively new here or new to practice, a good place to come practice. Good leadership, good service from the community supporting itself, good neighbors, whole thing. So here we are at the beginning of the year. Everyone in this room is old enough to be familiar with the beginning of years. And this month of January comes from the god Janus. And this god is pictured standing at the threshold. So entering the new year, but not quite. And having a forward-looking face to the new, but also having a second face that looks backwards, but not in the past anymore, because at this threshold. And this sense of being here in between in this way, of being able to take measure, because one can see the past and one can see the future as well, in a reflective way, not in a prophecy way, but in a reflective way of, oh, this has been the way it's been. This is what's worked well for me. That's what's not worked for me. Here I am at this point, and but my life feels like this. And these are my questions, my goals, whatever it is that I'm relating to. And so I'm going to move forward into that. But in moving forward, I wish to learn from the past, not relive the past. Not productive, this continual reliving of the past. Not productive, this demanding a better past. It doesn't really work. But in the moving forward, and in skillfully moving forward, and moving forward with a full commitment in a values-based way, in an intentional mindfulness way, I call it a compassionate intentional mindfulness, then one lives in such a way that the way one is living, maybe not this year, but eventually in the way one is living, parts of the past that would seem so irredeemable can become redeemed. Because what we learn, how the past shapes us with mindfulness, with this intentional mindfulness, with this compassion that allows us to learn from our experience in a way that opens our heart so that we are choosing non-suffering over suffering. We're having an aliveness that naturally chooses non-suffering over suffering, that is not causing suffering to ourselves or another. The past, even those parts of the past that are very difficult to acknowledge or that we have carried them around heavily, they become lighter. They come to have a purpose rather than just being a horrible event. They become something that has been fuel for wisdom, fuel for willfulness, fuel for resolve, that we know based on what was unskillful in our past, whether done to us or we did, that that is not the way to live. This is the way to live. And that then changes the past as we are holding it in the moment. Not the facts of the past, and we don't want the facts of the past to go away, but we wish to relate to them in a way that's informing us to open the heart and to bring wisdom. This is very, very real. This is practical. It's doable through practice that requires the mindfulness, that requires the intention, that cultivating both of those and cultivating the compassion. But it's very, very real. I've witnessed it too many times to try to guess a number in people, and some with really difficult experiences. Does that mean that we're happy-go-lucky around something of the past? No, why would we be? Why would we think that's the way it's supposed to be? Where do we get that idea except in, you know, advertisements? That's not the nature of life. Life is this big mixture of the difficult and the pleasant, of that which is uplifting and that which is pulling us down. That's the life that we dance with. We don't get to dance with one glittering moment after another, both in terms of our characteristics, our personality formations, our history, all of it, all of it. So in this time of reflection, sometimes we get a sense of ourselves. We're standing there on the threshold of this new year, and that some sense arises within us, and it can be in a symbolic form. We can have something that really strikes us as symbolic. This has resonance for us. It could be simply the darkness of this time of year that awakens something in you. Or it could be the fact that we're moving from this fading more and more into darkness to now we've made this turn and we're fading into more and more light coming into the time of year. And in this turning, that sense of possibility. We're still in winter. We're in a time where there's a sense of from our ancestors of time to lie fallow, time to have rest and renewal before the next coming of the major efforts of growing or hunting for our food and so forth. And so we are still in the time of winter storms, both inside and external, and yet we're in the time here, and particularly Northern California, of this beautiful, beautiful green grass. The green here right now is the most vibrant, alive, at least in my subjective experience, time of the year. The green is so alive that it almost hurts. And later it fades so fast here in Northern California to some other color of green. But it's really beautiful right now. And so it is within us, that no matter our age, no matter our circumstances, There's this parts of us that are alive, that are really green. And there's other parts that still there in the winter line. And some parts may or may not come back for us. I speak it this way because many of us in this room are older. And the beauty of being older is that it is, if we just slightly turn, it's so much easier to let go. Because we don't have so much hormones kicking through us that, no, I gotta hold on, you know. And so if we take that, this aging as an adventure, and we hold it that way with mindfulness, with compassion, with clear intention, the age and the spectrum creates different goals or something in terms of the external, but in the internal, we all want to grow. We all want to be more free. We all want to cause less harm to others, less harm to ourselves, to have a more open heart. It's not an age thing. So there are these times when, as we're feeling this, that you would think that we would be easily able to respond. You're all here. We're all here together. So we want to be mindful. We want to be compassionate. We want to have wisdom. You would think that having a technique, because mindfulness is an incredible technique, this sati, this being present. And it's not like consciousness of, like you're having an itch and you're conscious of that itch, or like you're mad. You're conscious of being mad, but that being conscious that you're being mad would not be what I would call sati. That's just the vijnana, the sixth sense gate consciousnesses. the Venerable Sumedho was saying this over and over again. When he's talking about sati, or certainly about awareness, he's not referring to these consciousness moments of consciousness of that you know, you've got an itch, you're aware of you've got an itch, or you're angry, or you're excited. Not, it's a much deeper kind of a related knowing. So you're aware of it, you know you're aware of it, and you're aware of you're knowing the surround. This is how I'm reacting to this itch. It's disturbing my meditation that I got this itch. So now you're aware of the mind's being reactive to the itch. So how it's related to the predominant experience of the moment is one of irritation, one of having an attitude towards that experience of, I have this itch. Oh, so now I'm going to practice with itch. And that's an accepting. You're aware of how you're relating to the moment. And much of our dance with life is in how we're relating to the moment, not in being able to have the moment be just the way we want it to be. Because oftentimes, the moment's not how we want it to be. Or who we are in that moment, our mood's not who we wish to be in that moment. We're upset, or we got a bad attitude, or we're bored. But then how are we relating to being upset or bored around whatever else is the predominant experience? That's where our freedom is and how we relate. And we use these same tools, this same sense of values to relate to the moment. So this is a reminder of this going into the new year. But oftentimes, it doesn't work that way. So here it is, 1 a.m. We should already be asleep. We should have seen that movie that was on television that we've seen other times, but we love so much because now it's 1 a.m. and we got to get up. But nonetheless, instead of going to bed, we go to the refrigerator. That's really going to help us sleep, right? And we're going to eat something that's high in calorie but not much nutrition, because it's comfort food, right? It's 1 a.m. Now we know that this is not wise. Or for you, it may be calling that person that when you call them on the phone, they're going to put you down. But you call them anyway, and they do put you down. Or it may be that you your significant other or your friend is doing something that you really think they should do otherwise, and you start telling them how they should be otherwise. And you know that that's only going to upset them and actually take you apart from them. But nonetheless, you do it. Why does that happen? So for me, there's three what I call gaps that come from that moment. That's kind of general, regular consciousness that we have. And the first of these gaps is that we know, but we don't know. It's hard to believe that that's true, but since you can watch your own behavior, you know perfectly well how to take care of yourself in many situations that you in fact don't do it. You really know what to do already, but you don't do it. Why not? So the first of these gaps between what would be wisdom, what would be caring, is that we know but we don't know. How that can happen, I will get to in a moment. So we're not actually able to be mindful. We're having the experience, but we can't be present for the experience. We just can't somehow. With practice, we can change that. But that's the first of these gaps. We know, but we don't know. So we don't ever get present enough to be able to really have choice. So we open that refrigerator door, we eat this that's not healthy for us, and we know the whole time, but we don't know. We make that phone call, we say these things that we know are not going to be helpful. The second gap is where we do have mindfulness, and in our community, our community is pretty well trained in mindfulness. across the board, I would say people who've been coming to the various local sanghas, coming on retreat, going to day longs, reading books, listening to talks, all this. Our community is pretty strong in mindfulness. We're not actually that isn't the rub so much. But even when the mindfulness, with given that we've practiced mindfulness, we have mindfulness. We fail to recognize we have choice. So there, we're going towards that refrigerator. We're watching this. We're mindful that we're doing this. But there somehow doesn't arise, oh, I have choice about this. We're separated from the choice. We know, but we're separated from the feeling of choice. This is a harder gap to cross over in those areas where we must let ourselves down. It's a wider gap, or the gap is the fog around it. I could use lots of different analogies. But so we know, we're mindful, but we don't know we have choice. And therefore, we open the refrigerator, we make the phone call, we open our mouth, and in some way, suffering is arising, unskillfulness is arising. The third gap is when we, in fact, are mindful. We recognize, oh, yeah, there is a choice here. And then we don't make it. How could that possibly be? That happens to me. Maybe I'm the only one in the whole room it happens to. But I suspect not. That's really interesting. If you look at it as phenomena rather than your movie, you know, just like, wow, this is human nature. Wow, that's really interesting. Huh. What is that? Just be more interested, more curious, rather than that to yourself, like, you know, how dumb you are, or whatever it is, it would or be your line of criticizing yourself. This gap is a gap that is of it's a different quality than that gap when we are mindful but we don't realize we have choice. So this is a different feeling. It's a more ingrained challenge, because at this level we're having to come into our deep-seated habits, our deep-seated patterns, the way that our emotions have gotten wired through time. So, you know, if those of you who are wanting a challenge for your new year, here's a challenge for you, because you're taking on something that's been so woven into your very being so often. It's really deep. It's really like, I certainly find that for myself. And I've studied this in myself for a long, long time. I actually mentioned all of this many years ago in this very room, maybe 2013 or 14 or something. Not in this time of year. I don't think I've ever given this as a talk in here, but I've mentioned this. So I've been teaching this recently, and somebody wrote me and reminded me that in the London Underground, there are these signs, mind the gap, before you'll step into. So mind the gap. There are these, and I actually think at one time they had little T-shirts. This was many years ago, about mind the gap, and I thought we should publish those T-shirts again. Mind the gap. And there was a article in the New Yorker many years ago, in which the author had this wonderful line. He says, in between knowing something and refusing to know it, in between knowing something and refusing to know it, lies a murky chasm that even the most enlightened among us are perfectly happy to inhabit. He's pinning the tail on the donkey. In between knowing something and referring to know it, I'm sorry, in between knowing something and refusing to know it lies a murky chasm that even the most enlightened among us are perfectly happy to inhabit. True enough, huh? It's murky. It's murky. And it's happening to us, so it's not that we don't know it's happening, but maybe we haven't said, oh, I really need to make this a priority. At least in some areas of my life, or at least in this one area of my life, or this one area of my life with this one person, I really need to do this. I need to close these gaps. I need to close these gaps. If I wish to become, you know, this bhavana, this sense of growth, this unfolding, there's a sila, which is ethics, dana and bhavana, this vipassana, this growing through insight, then I'm being called to step up here. Or maybe there's one resolution or aspiration that you've had for this year in terms of yourself, but there's gaps that are going to, you're going to fall into these gaps, and you won't be able to live it out. So taking this reflection tonight as practical, as immediate, here and now, to be explored for your benefit, because you've chosen to embrace it. You say, oh, I want to investigate this for my very specific reason. So the reflection is for you to then take possession of that reflection. It's not a should or why don't you, but more of do you wish to embrace this? That's the nature of a reflection, for it to resonate in you, not because of someone else thinks this way, but your own feeling of yes. So we see this gap happen in our meditation practice, whether it's here on Sunday evenings, whether it's in other centers you go to, other sanghas, in your day-longs, in your home practice. You know, we see it come up. We sit on retreat, and we learn to mind the gap. We can learn to mind the gap. And then, of course, we see it over and over and over and over and over, and then more overs and overs and overs and over and over and over in daily life, where we don't live what we know. We've so hard-won what we know. We've paid for it with embarrassment, with physical pain, emotional pain, impatience, just like, oh, I can't stand this moment, feeling that third kind of tanha, where you don't want to be, you just don't want to be in this moment. That's thirst of the second noble truth I'm referring to. So we've really paid for our knowledge. And said another way, we've invested and we've actually grown the crop of wisdom, but we don't necessarily go, oh, I've got to go harvest this crop of wisdom. If I don't harvest it, I don't really have it. I can look at it and see my past. Yeah, I've got this wisdom from my past, but we've not gone and cut it and consumed it and, you know, brought it into ourselves. Good time of year to reflect on this, in my view. So, again, it can be in our speech, where we repeatedly know in external speech what's wise, but that first gap appears, we know but we don't know, or the second gap appears, we do know and know we know, but we don't realize that we have choice, or that third gap, we're mindful, we realize that we have choice, but we don't act on the choice. So it can show up in external speech. It can show up in internal speech, the way you talk to yourself, the way you talk to yourself about yourself or about others. And it can show up in the grabbing hold of thoughts. We're not responsible for every thought that arises, because we can think anything. We can think the most horrible thing. We can have the most horrible image of our doing something or something being done to us. There's nothing wrong with that. But how we relate to those thoughts can be wisely relating or not. So this internal critic, we can have an internal critic that's always like, you know, poking us, and we can't control every one of those moments at all, but we can choose how we're relating to the internal critic. We can be saying to ourselves, we can be having a reflection of a belief, I can't do, this is over for me, whatever it is. We can only see the glum of what's left for us, or the glum of this time in our lives, and how we relate to that glum is within our range. But it takes filling those three gaps to not be defined by the gloominess, the harshness, the bitterness, whatever is possessing us. It takes filling those three gaps. Is this clear enough what I'm saying? Because this is easy enough to remember. Like, you don't even have to have notes, really. Because these three gaps, they're pretty clear. But, and they should, I would assume, be so familiar to all of us. So that's all in speech. Likewise in action. You know, sometimes it's walking in the room. You know, we don't want to walk in that room right now. We don't want to pick up that phone right now. We don't want to open that refrigerator door. We certainly don't want to open that bottle of alcohol or go even further in some sort of drug we're using, whether it's a prescription drug or plant medicine or whatever it is. We know not to, but we do anyway unless we fill these gaps. And then, so in speech and action, and then in the way we're relating to our thoughts. So compulsive thoughts, obsessive thoughts. We can be in a storm of compulsive thinking about something or someone, and we can't say, hey, I'm not going to do that anymore. It can go on, but we can change how we're relating to that pattern of compulsive thoughts in this moment. That may be a little hard for you to believe, but if you start exploring, you will find that it's true. So why does this happen? You know, everybody here could make your own list. I'm going to suggest a few things. One is habitual patterns. Habitual patterns are just like, we just go ahead, we just do. Habitual patterns are very useful because we use them so much, like in driving an automobile. We don't really pay that much attention in many ways to driving. And their habitual patterns are cooking and everything. But in making choices, habitual patterns, we maybe want to identify and create new. We don't really destroy the old, we replace it with the new. Gradually we start doing, we reframe and reframe and reframe, and suddenly we got a new habit, suddenly after 2 years or 5 years. If it's something not too big, it might be over 2 weeks or 2 months, but big things take time. That's why it's practice, you know. That's the advantage of being here, coming back to the breath moment after moment. You're just starting over, you're just practicing. And that's what gives you the patience, this patience and resolve, the two of the paramis that didn't, usually called perfections, but I call them attainments, just by practicing them. And it really does work. So that's one reason, the habitual pattern. Another thing that makes us have these gaps is that we are so addicted to the stimulation of the moment. So whatever we've, if it's opening that, if we're imagining something in that refrigerator that's going to be stimulating, we really want the stimulation. And, you know, we because we're not mindful at the first level, we don't realize, oh no, this is not skillful stimulation. This isn't a wholesome stimulant. We do it anyway because we don't notice. We're not mindful enough that we can evaluate it and realize we have choice and resolve, make that choice and so forth. Then the third is that we do have a negative bias, a kind of a nihilism, the Buddha would call it. And so there's a kind of nothing to lose, you know. There's a hungry ghost. Those of you who know the hungry ghost image in Buddhism, with this huge belly and this little mouth, we got that kind of, we're so frustrated, we go right ahead anyway. It's our kind of, you know, screw the world, this kind of thing, this kind of a negative attitude that we don't even notice. And it might take you, if you go looking for it, it might take you months to actually identify that, wow, that's really true, that's part of this. May not be in your particular situation with one, but it's there's a lot of this kind of a nihilism, a lot of screw it, you know, that we don't notice. And the fourth reason, I'm just, as my list of possible reasons, is that there is a kind of greed in us, that this wanting more, that there's a restlessness, and where that restlessness is being satiated in our imagination by more. We pick up the phone, we say that word, there's a kind of compulsiveness towards wanting what's not going to be heaven from that, but we're making some act as though we were going to get it. And it's the greed is running, but the greed has no wisdom. It just doesn't have any wisdom. It's not a bad thing, it just lacks wisdom. That's where we're supposed to come in. And then a fifth reason is that what I call rocking the baby. Sometimes we just need to be doing something that kind of reassures that we're here, or that we have feeling, that we still have feeling, or that we can get somebody to respond to us. So we do something we know is going to be negative, but nonetheless, that's relatedness, you know. You may know couples who really, that's their way of relating, is that they create a negative response in one another. But they are relating because that's the means they've developed, and it's become their standard way of relating. And then another one is this, in Buddhism is called sampajana, this clear, we lack a clear understanding of what is, that we don't realize there's a better way to live. We literally don't know. We no one's pointed this out. You don't have that excuse anymore. But even when it's been pointed out to us, we still have to have this this arising of clear understanding. I've mentioned in here before The Heart of Buddhist Meditation by Nanapanaka Thera, Thera. He has a great description of sampajana, this clear understanding. And even in one of the best Buddhist dictionaries, they, in the footnote, refer to his book. I don't know how many copies of that book I've sold, because it's just so useful when you're in the first 10 years of your practice, which I consider the beginning years of practice. So sampajana requires that you see what's called for, like what's called for in terms of, like, something's driving you to the refrigerator, to walk into that room, to pick up the phone, to whatever it is. So you see what's called for. That's the first of the four parts of sampajana, of clear understanding. Then secondly, well, what's suitable for me? Well, you know, I can maybe not call right now. I don't know how long I can last, but I don't have to pick up that phone right this moment. I don't have to go to the internet and read that thing again or look at that again, at least right now. So ideally, you'd never read it again, you'd never whatever again, but that's what would be great, but that's what's called for from wisdom or compassion or both. But this is all we can do right now. This is a very important thing, this sampajana, this suitability, it's called. You know, what's suitable for me under these circumstances in this moment? Because we try for too much. We're going to fix everything about us in this given area. Not real. But maybe in this moment we do have choice, and maybe in this moment we can actually make that choice. Sometime soon I want to talk in here about humility and the proper role of humility in practice. Without humility, it's very hard to find that the clear comprehension of what we can do. because we, you know, our enthusiasm, or like we really want it all to be better, you know. Let go, let go, let go. As best I am able, as best I'm able, just in this moment. Just in this moment. That's empowerment. I'm going to fix this whole thing. It's got so much other stuff in it. Can't go into that tonight. So, what's called for, what's suitable, seeing it as practice, and seeing it as staying in the mindful, what I call the mindfulness of reality. So we're seeing it in terms of, this is reality. This is the nature. It's like this. And that could have a lot more exploration in it, but not tonight. And then last, and this is on, I was just teaching Closing the Gap up in Seattle a few weekends ago. Did it for a whole weekend, what we're doing tonight in an hour, in a different form because it wasn't in relation to the new year. We are afraid to own our own capacity. We're afraid to own our own capacity. You know, even people who are really full of themselves, where I think they're owning more capacity than they have, and in my life, I've had reason to encounter a lot of that, because I've had reason to encounter a lot of people who've been really successful and they're quite full of themselves because they've been successful in some way or another. At this level of realness, at this level of being responsible for ourselves in terms of causing harm to ourselves or another, being skillful rather than not skillful, being wholesome rather than not wholesome, I think we're all varying degrees of afraid of our capacity. I just think we're afraid. And I understand it. I have my own fear. That fear comes for many reasons. One can be, I'm just going to list a few here. One can be that we're afraid we're going to try and fail. Well, we think we might have this capacity, but we'll be devastated if we try and fail. I know a number of you in this room, and some of you, that might fit. You're so afraid of trying and failing. It can be rejection, or it can be justice that it seems like it would be the devastation of failing. If you really tried, that you can't imagine that you could survive it. Sometimes that's actually true, but not nearly as much as that happens. Some people are really fragile in a certain way, and I wouldn't encourage them to try. There's not enough of buoyancy, not enough agency. But people who practice, you know, you're pretty buoyant because your practice is much more maybe of a ground for you or buoyancy for you than you realize. So that's one. And this is sort of turned into a cheerful talk, isn't it? A second one is that we have a lack of faith. And the faith is not the faith that I know I can, but the faith is that it might be possible. And I, by God, want to know. I want to know. I don't want to have lived this life and not know if I have this capacity or not. I want to know. I'm here, and I'm going to be leaving, and I want to know. That's the faith. And that's the kind of faith that can lead to what I teach as the imaginative possible, which many of you have heard me talk about. Because the imaginative possible is when you go, maybe, oh, I see, it's possible. It's possible. And you, because it might be possible, and you feel that it's a felt sense, it's an insight level. It's not a deductive, inductive. Might be possible, and you know it, it's insight, then you're more open to your capacity, and you find out. And it oftentimes turns out that when we find the level of which we can, the very finding out our real level brings us the peace, rather than what we imagined that we should be able to accomplish, or to have our life arranged a certain way, or where it will be a certain way. But that having gone for it, brings us this peace. A third reason is that we've never, let's see, I can't read my writing here. Our whole relationship to knowing, I've taught a lot about knowing, and you can listen to a lot of talks about me about knowing, that we're not really letting in this. We're not letting in this knowing, this, the whole thing about there's this vijnana, the sense consciousness, the six PAs, counting the mind, the thoughts. And then there's this sati that knows the relationship. And then there's this awareness that underlies all of that, that's the empowerment. And we don't ever turn to notice that we're still so involved in objects. We're so involved in objects that we don't believe there's something larger. And it's there the whole time. Ajahn Chah used to say to the monastics, "You're looking for the horse you're riding." It's there all the time. All the time. It's us that get distracted. And then the final reason that we're afraid of our own capacity that I would mention tonight is that we're afraid of what will be asked of us if we're really open to it. I think that's a very legitimate reason to be hesitant. I think that is very, very legitimate. And yet, are you willing to be, see what's asked of you, and then you see what you do with it? It's playing at the big tables. And no matter your life, no matter how small you think your life is, or all of these different ways that we all describe and imagine ourselves, are we willing to show up and see what's asked of us? That requires some thought. So, then how do we, since we've gone through all this valley, now we'll come up to where it's all, the big picture again. That what do we do about each of these gaps? And with the first of the gap that we know but we don't know, we cultivate the mindfulness in the form of recognizing. This is the first of the three R's. We recognize what's true in this moment. So if we're going towards that refrigerator, whether we go ahead and open it, and whatever we do with it, we're committed to recognizing what we know. I wish to live in a way that I recognize what I know, that I don't tune out what I know. I want to be present with what I know, even if it's embarrassing to watch me open that refrigerator door, pick up that phone, open my mouth about this, walk into that room. I still would rather be present for the screw-up than miss it. Clear enough, right? So I call that recognize. That's the first one, so that there's not that gap of that you know and you don't know. You always know, or you more and more know. You know in real time. It took 2.5 days. You start out knowing a little belatedly, but you get more and more in real time the way you practice this. You're not going to start out instantly knowing in real time, but you get more and more close to it. Then the second gap, when you say that it's not, oh, I'm doing this, I'm picking up the phone, opening the refrigerator door, whatever it is, opening the bottle of alcohol, taking more drugs, whatever it is. But you realize you have a choice. And so that's that. So you recognize, what's happening. And then the second is cultivating realization. So you're cultivating recognition through mindfulness. And then you're having realization, which is more insight than just mindfulness. You realize, oh, that's true. There's an insight. Oh, I have a choice here. I remember last time, I'm back into all the times I've opened that refrigerator door. I do have a choice. You may not be able to make that choice, but you realize you do have a choice. So sometimes there is no way that you really have a choice. But most of the time, there's some degree of something that can change around that choice. You can at least change how you're relating to it. You open the refrigerator door, but you have such compassion for for the one that needs nourishment, and this is the only form of nourishment you have. So rather than judging yourself or feeling sorry for yourself, you love the one who needs this. This is the nourishment that's available to me. You just love yourself. That loving yourself is not an indulgence. It's actually an empowerment to give you choice in the future, because what's ultimately missing for us all is a kind of love in that moment. We don't have enough love for ourselves. So we're looking for it in people or in stimulant or whatever it is. And then, that's the best I said that. So I want to get a copy of this tape. It's hard to say that, actually. So you recognize you know what you know. You realize you have a choice. That's so recognize, realize. And the third one of these is resolve. You resolve that you will, in fact, act out your choice. There's a resolve. I will act at this choice. I may have to stand in that refrigerator, from that refrigerator for a long time. I may have my hand on the door, and I'll say no as long as I can say no. That's the resolve. You're practicing the resolve, not the result. Do you see the difference in that? This is subtle but hugely important, because we're going to fail lots of time. But you build the muscle of resolve. It's a capacity. It is a capacity that lends itself to being developed. Pretty easy to see that for yourself, but it takes a bit of time. So, of course, in doing all this, you're doing it as practice. You may at times be unskillful in where you try to do this, because this is way too heavy duty. You should start with something more modest. And I do recommend modesty of starting this piece of the gap. You choose something where it's not such, where you're like a crazy person, you know, like you have, you're a zombie. You don't even know who's in charge. There's like, you're sleepwalking through or something. That's those kind of, when you're that far into it, don't start there. Start with something where there's a little more feeling of choice. But remember, every time you practice consciously with mindfulness, with the recognition, the realization, and the resolve, each of those are seeds. In Buddhist psychology, those are all karmic seeds that will blossom sometime in the future under the right conditions. And the Buddha said this is lawful. So karma is lawful in that way. So that helps in motivation. And of course, we're gonna miss all these opportunities. It's all gonna be a big mess. We'll forget that we've even thought about doing this. Like right now, you're thinking, "Oh, this might be worth thinking about doing some more." But then you'll forget it for 2 or 3 days. And then you have to remember it, or maybe the tape will come out, the thing on the website, and then you'll remember. So it's all kind of sloppy, and all that's normal. It's all normal. So we don't want to fall into judging ourselves again. And then the last thing to say about this, it's taken me longer than I thought it would take. Liz wrote me, read the newsletter and wrote and said, isn't there a 4th R about return? And yes, there is a returning, like returning to your core, what you're about. But that's true throughout. Being grounded as best we can. I've talked about the ground in other ways. And being grounded in our emotional bodies, you know, having compassion for our emotional bodies, it's the emotion that so often, just all these surround emotions that make it hard. Just accept, be compassionate towards it. So if you want to make your resolutions this year more interesting, treat them as this kind of practice of closing the gap, rather than your regular pattern, whatever that may be. So thank you very much.